Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Good late evening, Roxy Soxy.
Good late evening to you too, Tam Tam.
I don't think you have your bra on. I think we're both braless right now. This is a sight to behold.
That is very true, Tam Tam. We're in our skivvies and it is late at night.
You sound like an old lady. You just said you sound like an old lady. You're just like a skivvies. Skivvies? Who says skivvies?
See, the 40 plus crowd.
Is that skivvies or like your sleepwear?
I think skivvies, I think it's technically actually your underwear, which strangely enough, I'm not even wearing any.
Show it to us, Roxy. Wait, so your underwear is your skivvies, but that seems like a very Commonwealth like English term.
Doesn't it?
Is it American?
I want to say it might be a little Southern. There's like a little Southern
gotcha.
In there.
Yeah. Your skivvies?
Your skivvies.
Wow. I learned something new tonight at 10:30 PM. Just you and I
mean,
shooting it. Shooting the SHI. You know what? Talking about all the things that you talk about when you're delirious. See,
that is what I'm here for, girl. God, I can't talk either. Like, what is happening right now?
I know. It's too late. And we're going to talk about your little because you apparently have a story for me. And we're going to talk about that now and then also let our listeners know that we have been in Los Angeles for the last week, racking up some incredible guests. We have been in studio. We have been live recording. We have videos. We have YouTube that's about to come. It was about to be up and running. So as of now, because we're spending so much time editing everything, we are going to re-release one of our episodes that was one of our highest rated mm-hmm. and one of our most talked about, Alicia Vitti from Woman Code, talking about hormones and the best orgasm of your life and fasting and cycle syncing and all those things. So that is the episode that we're going to release after this little chit chat. But first, we need to hear about your experience at Disneyland.
I'm going to Disneyland. Okay. So basically what happened was, we had this like marathon, amazing work week. And like Tamman was saying, we were recording so much amazing content for you guys. And then my parents, my sister and my niece came to visit. So we thought we would take the kids to Disneyland on that Friday during the day. So all's well, we go to Disney. I think it actually worked out well because kids had already been back in school, except of course, our kids who start school later than everybody else in the world. It seems
your kids, everyone else's kids, just yours start after Labor Day in California.
Exactly. I'm like, when is it happening? So we get there, you know, we're going on the rides and everything and we're having a great day and we really make a day of it. Right. We're like, we're going to stay to the night and like do some night riding. And like, since it's like a weekend and, you know, we can sleep in tomorrow, we're really going to do this. So we did it. And then we were leaving. So we basically shut the park down. Right. It's like midnight. We go.
Just you. They're like, last call. Roxy and her family, get the F out of the park. Yes. They're like, they're making statements over the intercom. They're like, please, would Roxy Manning and her family leave the park? You're like, what for? Ride in a margarita.
I'm like, last call already? What bar am I at? So we get back to the car. And it's like, you know, like most people have left by now. And there are just a few cars parked in the lot. We get in the car and we're all buckled in, and I start the car and it's like, it cuts on, but it's like, whoa. It's making this really weird, almost like pained motor sound. And I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? And I see this light that comes on that says low fuel. I'm like,
oh, how did you not notice that on the way in?
Because I think I was expecting David to
you're
fill the
so
gas.
You're expecting David. I know. I hate filling my gas. Right. It's honestly my biggest pet peeve.
Don't
it's like
you
I
agree?
can't I can't deal with it.
Can't do it. And it was his car that I was driving, so I assumed that he filled it up, you know? So I'm like, okay. So we get there and I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, this is not good. So then we're trying it over and over again. And my sister sees like the security guy. So she like flags him down and he comes over. He tries to jump the car. He's like looking at it and he's like, I really think you might be out of gas. And I'm like, oh God, no, not
And David
that.
wasn't with you, right?
No.
So you couldn't blame him.
Yeah. He wasn't with us.
Yeah.
He was actually back home. My dad stayed back home with him here. So the two guys were here and all the gals were with me, including my mom. And so we're all just sitting there like, oh my God. So I call AAA. Long story short, AAA finally came at like 2:30 in the morning. We were
Oh
in that
my
car
goodness.
for 2.5 hours in
Oh
the
my
parking
goodness.
lot. Yes. Waiting for like something. They brought some gas. I got like a little bit of gas to just make it to the next like gas station, stopped, had to fill up. We finally got home at like 3 something in the morning, Tamman.
Oh
We
my
were
gosh. Moral of the story is fill up your effing gas tank, girls.
Yes. Oh my God, Tamman. I was like, and we had been at Disneyland since like 8 a.m. the day, but you know, that day
No.
we were so tired. We all just like fell into bed. We just like dropped trowel wherever we were, bags on the floor.
You dropped your skivvies. You
dropped my
dropped your
skivvies.
skivvies wherever you were.
Skivvies just dropped and
were everywhere.
I fell into bed and, you know, just,
no
I
wonder
couldn't.
you weren't texting me back. I was like, would she just text me back? And you're like, bitch, I am stuck in a parking lot with no gas.
Yes. Oh my God. So stuck with no gas. I was like, holy shizballs. Like, somebody help me. I was like, oh my God. So,
no, it's a lesson. It's the universe
yeah,
telling you to get your shit together.
it's true,
You know?
Tamman. And I'm usually like pretty good at least like glancing down at the fuel gauge, but
Glancing down. Did you blame David the whole
of
time?
course, because I was like,
Of
this is your
course. I
car.
bet you were raging. I bet you were like, how could you do this to me? I can't believe it. I can hear the rage text
You can
in
hear
my
it,
head.
can't you? And I like, it
Yeah.
was so bad. I like called him. He was like, he could tell I was like so pissed. And he was like kind of scrambling here. He was trying to like remotely start the
Right.
car from his like
Right.
key fob here. I'm like, I don't even know what's happening. But yeah, that was like Disneyland adventure story. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, I'm so sorry, but also thank you for the laugh.
Anytime.
And you know what? Maybe it's a good segue to say, where were you in your cycle when this happened?
Girl, right before my period.
Which is, yes,
so,
makes everything so
yes.
much worse and is not when you should be socializing
No.
or going to Disneyland. Or, I mean, walking's fine, but you should be like, you know, sitting and being zen, getting your journal notebook out, your positive affirmations, and you were hauling ass in Disneyland.
Sweating balls. I was like,
wetting
oh
balls.
My God, not having enough
Wetting
gas.
your hormonal balls in Disneyland.
I literally got my period. Okay, wait, that was Friday. Got it. What did I say? Monday. I got it Saturday night. So it was literally right before it was about to start.
Oh, I can't stand that. I got my period right after my birthday, actually.
Oh,
And
I
had like a whole mini, you know, midlife crisis breakdown the day before my birthday. And then I got my period the day after. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. I wasn't having a midlife crisis. I was just getting my period.
I mean, it all comes
yeah.
clear, doesn't it?
I know. And that's why this next, I mean, we have had so many people talk about this episode over the last few years. And it is one that I recommend to anyone who is struggling with any hormone imbalance or just wants to know more about their body or cycle syncing. And, you know, I think before this podcast, you didn't know much about cycle
Nope.
syncing and like living your life in accordance to your cycle, and how there are different phases and how each phase determines how you feel and how you think and how you mother and so many different feelings you have throughout the month. And yeah, I just listening to Alicia Vitti talk, it all made sense. And I hope that this episode will help other people who are struggling with hormonal imbalance or just want to know more, you know? So without further ado, who do we have, Roxy?
So we are so excited to have this amazing expert on. As you said, she knows many, many things about hormones. She talks about cycle syncing, the best time to have sex, how to make sex even more amazing in your life through, you know, cycle syncing and knowing all about your hormones and your reproductive health. And she literally gave us so much knowledge, and she's got amazing books, her website. You'll learn so much from. So without further ado, let's welcome Alicia Vitti.
It's great to be back. It's great to be here. It's great to see you guys again.
So I recently spoke to someone. I was getting my hair done for the first time since the quarantine began. And
I have cut my hair twice.
Oh,
myself. You did it yourself. It looks great.
I mean, with my daughter's kid-safe Crayola scissors.
Oh my gosh, maybe that's the secret.
I feel like I've never gotten a better haircut. I may not go back.
I love it. So back to like getting my hair done. Your head looks amazing. I was getting my hair done. I'm not sure if mine looks amazing, but I did it. And I spoke to someone we were talking about, because you know you're getting your hair done for like hours. And I was shooting the shit about hormones and how they truly rule your lives. Everything from sleep to mood to sex drive to weight control to creativity. And she was completely shocked. It was like I literally was talking in another language. She was like, what do you mean hormones control your life? Like, I had no idea. Hormones are so rarely spoken about. I feel, other than in regards to maybe PMS and maybe menopause and then maybe getting pregnant, but there's so much more than just that, correct?
I couldn't agree more. I think that the lack of body literacy that we have as women about our biology and our hormones, it's such a problem that needs to be rectified, because it prevents you from being your healthiest self, and it makes you suffer unnecessarily with symptoms that you shouldn't have. I mean, keep in mind that in 2015, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists decreed that you should consider your cycle a fifth vital sign, on par with the other four they take in the emergency room, like your temperature or your blood pressure. And we all know, especially in this COVID, you know, post-COVID world, if you got a fever, you get all over that, right? Mm-hmm. But if you have period problems or any issues with your hormones, we just tend to kind of suffer in silence, which is unacceptable and unnecessary. But yeah, I think that hormones are, you're right, seldom spoken of. And when they are, it's often negative and full of mythology and falsehoods.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really funny. I noticed a major shift in my hormones after I delivered my daughter and after I wrapped up breastfeeding. So basically what happened was I breastfed for a year. And then after that, it took me another full year for me to get my period back, because my hormones were like, yes, they were all over the place. They were fluctuating. I mean, it took forever. So what is it about like pregnancy and nursing that causes all of these hormone fluctuations, and how do we get them under control after we've delivered and nursed our babies?
Such an important question. So what you're speaking about is what is now being referred to as postnatal depletion. So think about it this way. For 9 months, you 3D print a human being inside your body. That takes place by taking the micronutrients from the foods that you're eating, which we call macronutrients, right? Mm-hmm. Extract your body, extracts all those micronutrients and builds a whole person with it, right? Then you go through the athletic, heroic, epic experience of delivering the child, whether that's vaginally or via a C-section, which is probably one of the most major surgical procedures that take place, but it's really kind of under discussed in how significant of a procedure that is. And then you're breastfeeding, you're mm-hmm. up all night, you're not sleeping, you're probably mm-hmm. not eating properly. You likely drop off taking your prenatals. You're trying to quote unquote get your body back. You're maybe working out. You're trying to restrict calories a little bit to lose the baby weight. And all of a sudden, you don't feel right. Right? You have signs of this postnatal depletion that can come in the form of mood swings. It can come in the form of delayed menstruation. It can come in the form of vaginal dryness, low libido, stubborn weight issues. Your hair can become super dry. Your skin can be completely different and dysfunctional. And all of this is this unaddressed micronutrient depletion that takes place because women are not educated properly about how to care for themselves postpartum. And it has to happen in that first 3 months after you give birth. It's called the fourth trimester. What you do in that fourth trimester sets you up for how you will recover for the, you know, for a few years after. And in Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, this period of time is so important that if a woman doesn't take the time to properly replenish herself, they know she will have issues, health issues, hormonal issues, perimenopause, postmenopause. She will be a weaker, more vulnerable version of herself from a health point of view. So really caring for ourselves postpartum is so critical. And a dear friend and colleague of mine, Kimberly Johnson, wrote a great book called The Fourth Trimester. I wrote the foreword to this book. I think it is a must read. And you have to read it before you give birth. It's a great thing to read in the second and third trimester so that you can really set yourself up with all the resources that you're going to need in that fourth trimester and beyond. For example, one of the things that I did and some of the things that I recommend, you want to be eating lots of cooked food. I did not touch a juice or a raw vegetable or a cold fruit for 3 months after I gave birth. Even the idea of doing it felt really like jarring to my body. Mm-hmm. Then I hired a physical therapist slash personal trainer who specialized in postpartum body care. Rehabilitation. And I worked with her over, this is years ago now, but I worked with her over Skype, Zoom, you know, so that we could work out whenever it was convenient for me. And it wasn't a workout. It was physical therapy to rehabilitate my abdominal muscles. Your hips stretch out with all that relaxin hormone. You need PT, right? Physical therapy, not intensive exercise to quote unquote lose the baby weight. And then of course, all the supplementation, right? And if you can dial in your food, your physical rehab and supplementation, you can really recover from your pregnancies, whether you have one or multiple, in a much more successful way.
It's interesting because I heard that, you know, with my second daughter, I did what you did and I had physical therapy and I had someone who cooked me food and my hormones were able to regulate a lot better. I got my period faster. I had less depression and anxiety. But it's funny because my first was 7 and I read a statistic that said, you know, really when postpartum depression, or maybe it's postpartum depletion, when it really peaks is around 4 to 5 years after birth. And I think it's what you're saying. I think what happens is women don't take care of themselves within that first three months. And so what happens is it just starts to build up. And it's like, if you don't brush your teeth after a while, the plaque starts to build up on your teeth. And it's the same thing about this depletion that happens. And then you're having another child and there's a third child or you're going back to work. And so I found it really interesting that postpartum depression really peaks at four years post-birth.
I think that, again, this is why I'm on such a mission with Flow Living, my company, as a femtech founder. You know, obviously I'm a science researcher first, but, you know, decided that this was such a big problem. You know, women's healthcare needs a major upgrade. And so the reason why I founded Flow Living was because I believe that women need a platform, a brand that is dedicated to educating them about what they need to know about their biology and their hormones, because we're just not getting that accurate information anywhere. We need tools to make navigating our changing hormones so much simpler. I mean, listen, this is my whole world. This is what I've been doing for 20 years. And I can appreciate that for most of us, it feels complicated, overwhelming. Where do I start? And it's not your job to figure this out. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be left on your own to figure it out. And each one of us shouldn't be having to reinvent the wheel every time we go through these issues. Like, you shouldn't have to discover, oh, I should somehow take care of myself postpartum. That should be universal knowledge, right? And someone should have figured that out for us and keep transmitting that knowledge in a very simple, straightforward way. So that's what Flow Living does. And we also provide those tools that make it so simple. So our supplements, our one-on-one telehealth coaching, and our digital therapeutic courses that teach you what's going on and what to do so that you have a game plan that you don't have to figure out on your own, to make this so much easier, because we deserve that. We just deserve it. It's time. I don't think with what the limitations are with conventional gynecology, they don't have much time to spend with you in the office because of all the limitations they have, from insurance and all the stuff that goes on, and they're packed. In a 10-minute session with them, can they teach you about everything you need to know about your body and what to do to take care of it until your next appointment the following year? No. But that's, I think a beautiful, nice relationship that we have. A lot of gynecologists will send their patients to us because they know we're kind of like the Weight Watchers of your hormones, right? So if you need help, you don't have to be on your own. You can come to a place that's going to help you make dealing with this so much more simple.
Mm-hmm. It's no joke that we live in the world we live in, and there are a lot of things in the environment specifically, especially in the last, few decades, like just the environment in general has gotten so much worse. What are some of the biggest hormone disruptors in the environment today?
I mean, where to start? It's not easy for ovaries.
In everything, isn't it?
I have my little ovary mascot behind us for encouragement.
I love it.
Listen, I would say you've got to first and foremost make choices about what you're putting inside your body. So if you're taking in pesticides on food, we know that those are endocrine disruptive, not to mention that they have other potential, health effects. The second biggest culprit is what you're putting on your skin, because it's the largest organ of your body and it's the largest organ of elimination. So we've got to look at our beauty products, our body products, our laundry detergents, right? Things of that nature. Even if you're spending a lot of time in clothing, see if you can lean more towards sustainable, eco-friendly, or organic fabrics, right? Because you're absorbing that stuff. Same thing for mattresses. I mean, I was a little surprised to find all that I found that are in mattresses, conventional mattresses, when I went looking years ago for my daughter's crib mattress. It's really important. You're spending 8 hours at least a night on this mattress, and you are absorbing all the stuff that is outgassing through the skin. And so you really want to, again, what's in your body, what you put in, you can control that, and you can control the choices that you're making about what you're putting on your body. If you just focus on those two things that you have agency over, as opposed to all the stuff that's in the environment that is just out of our control, out of our reach, I think it makes such an enormous difference. I mean, there is a study that showed that within 7 days, 90% of any orally ingested pesticides will have cleared themselves out of your body through a urine analysis study that was done. So not to say that those effects don't linger a bit, but you do have a lot of, you should have hope that when you make these changes, you're going to get some results immediately.
For some people who are new to the word, like hormone disruptors, because it's funny because I'm around people who talk about this all the time. So you just think everyone understands what a hormone disruptor is. But people are like, okay, so don't have pesticides, use clean products, sleep on a mattress that is organic. But why? Like, why do these toxins in the environment and in our products, what do they do to our hormones, and what are the symptoms we have because the hormones are being disrupted?
So These are often referred to, these chemicals are often referred to as xenoestrogens. That's with an X, X-E-N-O, and then the word estrogen. So these xenoestrogens mimic estrogen in the body. And that will mean not just elevating, let's say, serum levels of estrogen, but also, remember like cell biology from junior high, right? The estrogen, there are specific receptor sites on your cells for estrogen. And these xenoestrogens will bind to these receptor sites and create a little bit of chaos because they're not identical to your estrogen, right? Mm-hmm. So it just changes the functioning of your endocrine system as a whole. And that can, especially when we have elevated levels of estrogen, can be really problematic, right? It can cause the growth of things that shouldn't grow, whether that be a fibroid or a cyst. It can cause heavy bleeding. It can cause more significant PMS, any sort of elevated estrogen. Of course, there's risk of cancers in your family. That is something to be concerned about as well. So it's not great. You know, mm-hmm. I think there are short and long-term risks for these, you know, xenoestrogens.
You know, so many women also, you know, are on a pregnancy journey and, you know, want to have children, but so many of them have infertility. So how much of that is controlled by hormones, and like, what are some of the other factors, and what can women do as it relates to their hormones to help their fertility?
Mm-hmm. So fertility is both a hormonal and a micronutrient rich situation, meaning if you want to optimize your fertile factors, you've got to support your hormones and you've got to really be, you know, flush with all of these key micronutrients that your body needs to perform its basic functionings. And what do I mean specifically by that? For example, 93% of all infertility has a common denominator of vitamin D3 deficiency.
I know. It's a, wow. Yes. That's what they said to me with miscarriages. Yeah.
And then you talk about the fact that most women are not just depleted in that one micronutrient, but so many. So that means we're reducing your fertile factors in direct proportion to how depleted you are from a micronutrient standpoint. And prenatals, although can be wonderful, don't often get you to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. From a nutrient point of view, you have to factor in what has happened in your self-care journey that may have put you in the red, let's say, from a, you know, if we're looking at your micronutrients like a bank account, right, or a checking account, you might be in the red. And what would have caused that? Do you have a history of eating disorders, right? Do you have a history of extreme dieting? Have you been on synthetic birth control? And if so, for how long? Because that massively depletes your body of micronutrients that you need to have healthy hormonal balance. Do you have a pre-existing and uncorrected hormonal problem, menstrual problem, like PCOS, fibroids, endometriosis, all of which implicate your hormonal imbalance in them? Do you drink a lot of caffeine, alcohol, use substances? Again, all of these things deplete the body of micronutrients, disrupt hormone balance, and that will diminish fertile factors by disrupting ovulation, decreasing progesterone production, and really those two things alone will make you less fertile, because if you're not ovulating and you don't have enough progesterone, you're not going to have an egg to fertilize, and you won't be able to hold on to that with adequate levels of progesterone if the egg were to get fertilized, right? Mm-hmm. So that seems a little scary, but at the same time, the good news is every single one of those things I just listed, those are lifestyle issues, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like you have a tubal blockage, right, that needs some sort of medical intervention, which some women do, and they have to have a medical intervention to correct that. These other things are things that you have been doing unknowingly to yourself for years and years, and not realizing that they were going to have any impact on your fertility. But, you know, once you get more information that those things potentially have or are causing that depletion, you can get into correct action, start doing things, taking supplements, cutting out the caffeine and alcohol, getting your hormones back on track. I mean, that's what Flow Living is here for, right? Mm-hmm. If you're having any hormonal issues you need addressing, come to Flow Living. It's all virtual. And put yourself on a path where you have the opportunity to boost your hormonal balance. And if you're trying to conceive, you know, really prepare your body for that.
It frustrates me because we don't put a lot of attention or time or money into that. We're just putting a lot of time, energy, and money into like IVF, you know, which again is wonderful that there is IVF, but imagine how many people probably didn't have to go down the IVF journey and down the IVF road if they knew how to truly replenish their body with what you said, like the micronutrients and the things that they are depleted in that could have helped them. Like for me, I didn't have to do IVF, but I had so many miscarriages that I went and saw someone like you who really bolstered my body with like the vitamin D's and the B's, but the folates, not just not a multivitamin that I found in the store. We really figured out what I was depleted in, and it really helped me grow a very healthy baby. So I was just lucky that I had that information, and that's why it's so important to me and to Roxy and our podcast is to get this information out to people, because I'm sure that our listeners, some of them didn't even know this information. So can you also talk about the four phases of a woman's cycle? Because this is something that I learned a couple years ago when I read your book, and I have the app MyFlow, but it has the four different phases of a woman's cycle. There's a menstrual phase, there's a follicle phase, which I don't do very well on. I would like to know why. The ovulation, where I get kind of testy right in the middle, and then the luteal, which I do wonderfully on, which is strange because luteal is, you know, just before your period, which is when a lot of PMS happens. Can you explain those four phases and also how they relate to exercise, food, creativity, and why the hell I am horrible when I ovulate? Which is not sexy. You ovulate because you're like, oh, I want to have sex. My husband does not want to have sex with me when I ovulate because I'm very mean.
Yeah, it was almost like you're having a period too. You get cramps and everything when you ovulate. It's
right,
like,
now I'm ovulating. I just want to like hit a wall. Like, I get very aggressive when I ovulate. I don't know.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. If we were in a session, I would ask you a bazillion questions, but we're not, so I won't.
You can still ask Roxy and I a bazillion questions. I can tell you everything I ate, what I did, what I saw.
So we're now talking about what's in my new book, In the Flow. And one of the things that I, you know, wanted to understand was why is it that so many women are struggling with their hormonal issues? Really, what is going on? Because both men and women are equally exposed to endocrine disruptive chemicals. We all have stress. We all have micronutrient depletion. Why is it that so many more women, and now we have statistics that it's about 50% of women are struggling with hormonal problems, and I think that's a lowball number, frankly. You know, why are so many more women struggling compared to men if we keep everything else equal? And I went digging. And there are two things that I found, but I'll focus on the one. And one of the things that I found was that we have been overlooking a key biological rhythm that we have called the infradian rhythm, I-N-F-R-A-D-I-A-N. This infradian rhythm, you experience it over the course of your cycle. Now, it has these four phases. I just want to make a little quick comparison to the circadian rhythm. You all know the circadian rhythm, right? You experience it in the course of 24 hours. We used to think, you know, a while back when we first discovered the circadian rhythm, that it just governed the sleep-wake cycle. Mm-hmm. In all the research that's been done since its discovery, we know it governs like when your bowels are more active, when they're less active, when your blood pressure is higher, when it's less, you know, elevated, and so many more specific timings around activity of different bodily functions. Similarly, the infradian rhythm, it would be too simplistic to say that it just governs when you ovulate and when you have your bleed. It governs six key systems of your body. It affects your brain. In fact, your brain changes. This was discovered in 1996 by Dr. Catherine Woolley at Northwestern University. She discovered that your brain changes up to 25% over the course of the month. Mm. Okay. You think, create, produce differently throughout this as a result of this infradian rhythmic effect. It affects your metabolism, which I'll dive into a little bit more. It affects your microbiome, your stress response system, your immune system, and your reproductive system, including periods, fertility, and sex drive, right? So this biological rhythm, the infradian rhythm that women have from their first period to their very last, is so important for us to know, because as we have overlooked it, we have kind of cut ourselves off at the knees of being optimally healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And all of this biohacking conversation that really just amplifies like the circadian rhythm only viewpoint, which by the way, mimics the male 24-hour hormonal pattern pretty closely. Guess what? It's making men really, really healthy, but it's disrupting your infradian rhythm, right? So let's break down this infradian, because that the degree of the disruption to your infradian rhythm is absolutely the degree to which you're having period issues, fertility issues, sex drive issues, mental focus issues, immune issues, metabolic issues. It's all connected through this biological rhythm. And, you know, this, I'm very proud that In the Flow is the first book to talk about the infradian rhythm yet. So we have these four phases, as Tamin mentioned, the follicular, the ovulatory, the luteal, and the menstrual. Each of these four phases has a specific hormonal ratio of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, follicular stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, right? And there's charts in the book that show you exactly what is happening when. What I would love to talk about is, let's talk about the metabolic effect so you understand what's happening to your metabolism. Let's talk about stress response, right? We could, if we have time, we can talk about sex response. And please, we can even talk about, because I guarantee you, I mean, just because the statistics show 65% of women are sexually unsatisfied because you do not know about the infradian rhythmic effect on your libido. So let's do those three. We'll there's a whole brain piece and a time management piece, but let's at least start with these three because they're so useful and give you the big bang for the buck. So you have been conditioned to believe, because the other thing that I found was that women are being left out of medical fitness and nutrition research, right? And what that means is that there is this big assumption, and the assumption is, oh, well, we're not researching women, but let's just assume that they're smaller versions of men with a slower metabolism. So whatever's good for the guys should work for the women. We know for certain, whatever we just researched on the male subjects is definitely optimizing their biology and getting these clear results. But let's just share that with everybody. And the women can, you know, pick up these crumbs of our research that, again, was done on men, and hopefully it'll help them too. That is what has been happening to us for decades, okay? It's totally institutionalized gender bias in research. It needs to be called out and it needs to be addressed. As far as the medical community is concerned, they have been aware of it. As of 1996, they put out a special, you know, call to researchers to say, please include women in human clinical trials, because we know how detrimental not having that actual data is, because making assumptions is dangerous, right? So, but fitness and nutrition research, it hasn't really caught up there yet. And I think we can do better. It's, you know, it's 2020. It's the 20.
What year is it?
You know,
the never ending
2020. We've got to upgrade, right? It's time for something better. So when I looked at that, I just said, okay, no wonder we're all feeling frustrated, right? Like here's the classic story. Jack and Jill are both overweight and they start a diet and fitness plan together, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this, like, there's been commercials like this, right? After 30 days, Jack looks like a Greek god, and Jill is still fat and frustrated.
Right.
Something's wrong with Jill. Poor Jill. She's a woman. She has complicated hormones. She has a slower metabolism. She just needs to work harder. And you, because you've been deprived of real, scientifically accurate information about your biology, you believe that. So what is that? How does that translate? You restrict calories every single day. You think you should eat less all the time. And then you work out too intensively all the time. And you do this, you try to be the same every day, which, by the way, if you're on a male 24-hour hormonal biological rhythm, yes, you want to do the same thing every day at the same time. But if you have an infradian rhythm, which is cyclical, doing the same thing makes you sick. Doing the same thing every day gives you symptoms. So what does it look like? What is actually happening? Let's look at the metabolic piece. In the first half of the cycle, the follicular and ovulatory phases, your metabolism is slower. You can have fewer calories and it will be effortless. You can eat lighter juices, salads, lighter foods, steamed things. You'll feel great. as soon as you finish with ovulation in the second half and you go into that luteal phase, right, your metabolism speeds up. And research has shown you need precisely 279 more calories per day. If you don't eat the 279 calories in, you know, as needed, you will get massive cravings. And then because of your neurotransmitters, ghrelin specifically, instead of reaching for like a sweet potato, right, with some coconut oil on it, because that's what you should have had for breakfast, right? At night, by the time you're starving and your metabolism has crashed and your blood sugar is in the toilet, you're going to wake up after having zombied yourself through a sleeve of Oreos or a bag of chips or whatever it is, right? And like, oh, wait, where'd that whole bag go? Where'd that whole sleeve go? So there's that. But the other thing that's happening is when we don't eat enough in the second half, we disrupt our blood sugar so profoundly, which, by the way, disrupts ovulation for the next cycle. So if you're trying to conceive, this is really, really important. And because of this disrupted blood sugar, extra cortisol will be recruited to try to keep things stable, because extra cortisol will talk to your fat cells, have your fat cells convert stored fat into usable blood glucose. And now we have more cortisol, more blood sugar, and that decreases the amount of progesterone that you'll make this cycle and next. And it becomes very quickly this vicious cycle where month over month, you're making this problem worse, disrupting your hormones and cycle more, decreasing your fertility more, creating more PMS symptoms week, month over month over month. So not appreciating that the infradian rhythm has this dynamic impact on your metabolism, that you are not the same metabolically every day and not eating the way that you're supposed to from a calorie point of view, really messes you up. So that's the bad news. The good news is now you know what the changes are, and you're just going to eat the right amount of calories at the right time. And the app MyFlow will remind you where you are when, so you know when to eat those more calories, right? There's a layer with the food where you can start to use food strategically to help with estrogen detox. So for example, Tamin, since you're someone who's struggling with mid-cycle issues, right? To me, that's a sign.
I get also very, please tell me what this is. I get very paranoid when I'm ovulating. It is the strangest thing. Every time I ovulate, I have these wacky dreams for two days. And then everything goes back to normal. I get very, very paranoid. Is that something?
No, I mean, I think, listen, estrogen's a really powerful hormone. It has pretty profound effects on our brain chemistry. Normal amounts of estrogen, right? And this is what I was going to say to you a minute ago, which was you can use food strategically because it seems like you're having some elevated estrogen that you're struggling to metabolize quickly during ovulation, because you're having a little hyperstimulation of things in your brain chemistry. You're having cramping, which is called middle schmerz, and that's mid-cycle pain due to ovulation, right? So that to me is just a symptom of some excess estrogen. So in the flow, there's a food chart in chapter four that shows you which specific foods in each of the phases can help you break that estrogen down a little bit more quickly to help your liver, your large intestine, process it, flush it out of your system, right? And the reason why you feel so good in the luteal phase.
Yeah, is that why? Because it's lower estrogen.
No. Actually, you have a second rise. So ovulation is the peak surge. You have a super surge of estrogen during ovulation, but you also have follicular stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone as well. You have a rise of estrogen in the first half of the luteal phase. But what's different about the luteal phase, what's unique about it compared to the other three phases, is that this is the only phase in which you have access to progesterone. Progesterone, when it is in adequate levels in your bloodstream and in your brain, has this calming.
Oh, I'm but wonderful for 10 days.
It's great. It's my favorite phase. It's ironically, though, the phase that most women feel is their worst phase. And it's their worst phase because they have too much estrogen, not enough progesterone. And why might that happen to them? Well, because they're eating and exercising and in ways that disrupt the infradian rhythm, which will then deplete that progesterone in the luteal phase. And of course, they're micronutrient depleted. So we talked about the metabolic shift. Let's talk about the stress response shift, because it kind of loops back to that PMS situation. So in the first half of the cycle, follicular and ovulatory, you have lower resting levels of cortisol. In the second half, once you cross over into the luteal phase, you have slightly elevated resting levels of cortisol, right? This can give you energy to get more things done while you have all that progesterone making you calm and focused, right? The problem is, if you do the wrong workout intensity and you're not modulating your caloric intake, you can create like a hormonal disaster for yourself, and you don't feel calm, focused, and productive, right? You feel terrible. So what do you need to do? In the first half, you're going to do all your high intensity interval training, your cardio, dance your pants off, have a great time, right? Soon as you cross over to the luteal phase, then you must not do HIIT workouts and cardio. You must do strength training of all sorts without a cardio component. So that could be Pilates. That could be lifting heavy weights slowly and steadily, right? That could be holding planks and holding squats up against the wall so your legs fall down, shaky, 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 right? All of that kind of stuff. But no cardio. If you do the cardio in the luteal phase, guess what happens? They've researched this. You turn on fat storage and you turn on muscle wasting. So let's go back to that example of Jack and Jill, right? Mm-hmm. All the research that says eat the same calorie level every day, front load calories in the morning, less at night, work out first thing in the morning, less at night. All of this optimizes male hormonal biochemistry. Metabolism, testosterone, lean muscle gain, fat utilization, all of that. When Jill does, so when Jack does it for 30 days, he gets a six pack, he loses weight, it feels great, it feels like a new man. When Jill applies the same thing, because she is eating the same calories and then she's doing that same high intensity workout every single day for 30 days, she makes progress for the first 2 weeks. She'll gain some lean muscle, she'll lose some fat or use stored fat as fuel. And then as soon as she's in the luteal phase, if she keeps eating the low calorie level and doing the high intensity workouts, she will undo all the progress that she's made. So if any of you have ever been scratching your head thinking, gee, I don't think I could be more dedicated or committed, or I know I'm counting the calories the right way, and why is it at the end of every month I feel like I've made no progress? You are not crazy. You are not imagining that. You have just been trying to do self-care with food and fitness in a way that optimizes male biology and disrupts female biology. Right? And so you've got to change what you're eating and change the workout intensity to protect that infradian rhythm. I mean, keep in mind, I used to be obese. I used to be 210 pounds. I have maintained a 50-pound weight loss for 20 years, and I gained 50 pounds during my pregnancy, was able to get that right off, again, using this methodology. And it's not just me and all the women who are cycle syncing all over the world. The U.S. women's soccer team is using this methodology to train their female athletes, because you cannot ignore scientific facts. It's illogical. Why would you do that training of an intense workout at the wrong time in your cycle when it's going to cause you to, you know, weaken your lean muscle and turn on fat storage? It's illogical. And by the way, men also know all about how their biology works, and they do what's right at the right time to get the most result with the least amount of effort. And that is what I want for women, by having them understand this whole infradian effect. And, you know, that's at least the food and fitness piece on metabolism and stress.
So with this infradian rhythm, because I know I've suffered from it, is that I have insomnia a lot. And I feel like it's just gotten worse for me. You know, I guess it's each passing year, also, you know, post baby, like all of it. So how much of insomnia, how much can you blame that on your cycle? Like what are, you know, what is the effect?
So insomnia is caused by many factors, right? Mm-hmm. Can be magnesium depletion, can be, the cortisol, your adrenal dysfunction, right? Again, which could be caused by decades of disrupting your infradian rhythm without realizing it, right? If you have PMS that's been unaddressed, we know you have insufficient progesterone, not enough progesterone is going to, you probably notice, or if mm-hmm. you are tracking, you'll notice that your insomnia is worse the days leading up to your cycle beginning, your bleed mm-hmm. starting, because that's when your progesterone is the lowest. Mm-hmm. So there are many, many factors. And then perimenopause, mm-hmm. as your body down regulates, makes less concentrations of hormones, right? That can start to have an effect on sleep. But I really think, because nature is so elegant and efficient, mm-hmm. that if women were educated in their early teen years about the infradian rhythm, like at 9 and 10, we're not even talking about your period. We're talking about this biological rhythm, just the same way children are educated about the circadian rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. If you had that knowledge at 9 and 10, you knew that whenever your first bleed happened, that was the signal to you, the biofeedback marker to you, that your infradian clock has become active, then you would know how to change your self-care from that moment forward, and you would not suffer 2 to 3 decades before perimenopause, right? So that you would not have all of these symptoms, right? So that's where I sort of want to split the hair a little bit, because to say, oh, my hormones are causing me insomnia is not actually correct thing to say. It's our mismanagement, or actually neglect, of our infradian rhythm, of our hormones, for decades. Before you have these symptoms, you have been disrupting it for a long, long time. That's the real cause of it. So I would like to see a future in which women don't have these symptoms. Or if they do, they're so easily rectified by adding a little bit of extra nutrient, micronutrients, because you have had that stable base of deeply supporting your hormones at every stage of your life. Like, you knew what to do in your 20s and 30s to do self-care properly, so you didn't extreme diet and overwork out. You protected and preserved your fertility. Then after you gave birth, you knew exactly how to rebalance your hormones, and you did that replenishment postnatally. And then leading up and preparing for perimenopause stage one, you increase your self-care and adjust it properly, so that when you're really stopping having a regular cycle in stage two of perimenopause, you're symptom-free. And then you have your last period, and it's a beautiful journey from start to finish. That's what it's supposed to be like.
I know Roxy. I've known Roxy for a while, and she's just the life of the. I've never seen her relax. You know, she's just so amazing. Like, I can't do what she does. Like, she travels and she works, and she's always like the one who's at the event. And I think maybe as her friend, it's like, as much as she puts into that, she also has to take care of herself when it comes to like the rest and relaxation and, you know, all that, because I know that, you know, that's a part that like I want for her. I want her to like also go, you know, I deserve to get a massage. I deserve a day off. I deserve to like put the kid with the husband and take care of myself, you know, because, you know, I want her around for a long time.
Thank you. It's hard though. It is hard to slow down, but you know, quarantine has sort of, you know,
so it's not like you gotta stop you.
Quarantine, I think, is adding a lot more stress actually to people. But I want to speak to this point that you're bringing up, Tamin, because oftentimes what I think women are feeling in terms of when you add all those, like, that was a laundry list. Massages, slowing down, doing less, right? All good things. The problem is we feel burdened by like, oh, now I have to do more self-care on top of everything else. And like, there's this like pressure in the wellness conversation of like, you know, where's your jade roller or your whatever, the quartz roller for your face? And are you doing gua sha massages for yourself?
Oh my gosh, no.
Are you doing vaginal steaming at home?
Like, there's such a thing as vaginal steaming. Why are we not doing this, Roxy? We can do this on girls' night.
I know, we can vaginal steam. There's like an egg you can put.
Girls' night.
Right. I mean, there's like all this stuff, right? And the reality is the pressure that comes from thinking that on top of managing your normal everyday to-do list, that you also somehow, in order to be a good wellness woman, that you have to add all these extraordinary procedures into your life, right? again, is it can feel like more stress. And I have a beautiful solution for this. It's called the cycle syncing method. And so we talked about the food and the fitness piece, but we didn't talk about this time management piece. As I mentioned earlier, your brain changes by up to 25% over the course of the month. You are a slightly different version of yourself, each of these four phases, in beautiful, creative, energy-based ways, right? So in the follicular phase, you're very curious and like you can make a list and project plan out your month. And that's really fun for you to like think about something over the course of time. In your ovulatory phase, that surge of estrogen that we talked about before, it hyperstimulates the verbal and social centers of your brain. So this is when you want to be out, you want to be talking, you want to be presenting ideas, whatever you do with your verbal and social skills that lights you up. Then in the luteal phase, because of that progesterone, right, you have this calm and focus to like get things done. But in order for you to have to use that and get things done, what do you have to do on the backside of that, right? You have to say no to things, right? So if Roxy's issue, as you are observing it as her dear friend, is that she is overextending herself potentially, right? If I were to just sort of, you know, paraphrase, right? Doing too many things all the time. If she were to start cycle syncing her project map over the course of the month in alignment with these cognitive shifts, and she set up the boundaries like, okay, during this 10-day period during my luteal phase when I could do all my deep work, I'm not going to go to the networking event. I'm not going to take all these meetings. I'm going to save those and push them to the times in my cycle where that's easiest for me and creates the least amount of stress in my body. This kind of deep alignment with our biology, in my opinion, is the most effective form of self-care that you can take on. Massages are great. Yoni eggs are great. Whatever you want to do with your crystals and everything else is great, as long as it doesn't feel like a chore, as long as it doesn't add stress. But if you want to really deeply get rid of stress in your life, you've got to start aligning with doing things at the right time for you and your biology. And again, let's just look at what the men do. Corporate culture is completely organized around male hormonal biological rhythms. So they have a lot of meetings early on in the day, and they do as much deep work as they can early on in the day. Then around, and these meetings are working meetings where they're working on things. Then around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, when serum levels of testosterone and cortisol are dropping, what do men do in corporate culture? They shift to networking, happy hour, wrapping up the day, right? The entirety of corporate culture is allowing for men to be in alignment with their cognitive strengths, energy levels, and ability to focus, and sort of keep separate when they're going to be doing their socializing and all these other social obligations. We as women, however, because we have not been told about our infradian rhythm and we just try to squeeze ourselves into this circadian lifestyle, we just say yes to everything, any time of the day, all the time. And we just hope that we can squeeze in what we need whenever we have time. And guess what it's doing to all of us? It's burning us out. It's making us stressed. It's disrupting our hormones. It's decreasing our fertility. It's shutting off our sex drive. It's making us age prematurely from a hormonal point of view. And it is all something that we could stop if we just embraced our infradian nature.
And not feel guilty too.
You know,
why would you feel guilty about your biology? It's just,
no, you're right. No, you're right. No, about, you know what it is. It's
you
like,
you would feel guilty if you didn't know about it. You'd say, gee,
like not going to the events. I think she means not.
Exactly. It's like, not like, I could, and I think too, when you're an entrepreneur, like you always feel like you could be working, right? Like when it's your brand or your business.
I write books. I have a kid. I do podcasts. Yeah. I am an entrepreneur like you. And what I'm saying is I would definitely not be able to be this productive if I did not leverage my infradian rhythm to the hilt. I would be long since burnt out by now.
I hope Roxy and my cycle sync, because what if she's on her period and I'm ovulating? We'll be like, we'll never get a podcast done.
That's perfect. You don't need to be all of our, you know, we have so many women on the Flow Living team. We're never on the same cycle.
Yeah.
It's not something you have to discuss with your coworkers. In fact, I go into corporations. I was just at a fantastic corporation, very progressive, very inclusive company in New York, a tech company. And, we were talking about how do we make the corporate environment more inclusive for the female biological rhythm? Because right now it's exclusively circadian in orientation. What would that look like? And so I always say this, listen, everybody, you know, guys do not walk around and say, hey, I'm in my testosterone surge. I need to do this, or I can't have this meeting now because I got to go in the man cave. Like, they don't make any announcements. They just are understanding what's happening in their biology. Mm-hmm. They personally manage their project map so that they can work optimally. Mm-hmm. And then they bring those talents whenever they're interacting with other people. That's exactly what you want to do, except with your infradian rhythm, right? So you don't need to know if your coworker is bleeding or ovulating, whatever. Let's say we're in, I'll give an example of our team meeting, right? I always plan team meetings when I'm in my follicular phase, because that's when I like to do project planning. And I bank on the fact that the rest of my team is not in their follicular phase, because if they were, we would be in trouble, right? And here's why. Mm-hmm. In my follicular phase, especially if we're doing strategy planning for, let's say, a quarter, I'm like, okay, because I want to do so much to help women. I'm like, let's do the following 20 projects. And hopefully there will be people on my team who are in the luteal phase, the menstrual phase, right? Who are going to be more evaluating and negotiating, like, how much time is this going to really take? And to push back in that conversation and say, Alisa, all these ideas are great, but we can't do all 20 in this quarter. These are the two that I think would be the most important to focus on now. And here's why. Da, da, da. I don't know where they are in their cycle. I don't need to know, but they know, and they're bringing that gift, that cognitive gift, to that conversation, to that interaction. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. So we don't have to think. In fact, it's not advantageous for all of us to be in the same place at the same time. The diversity is what mm-hmm. creates more successful outcomes in a team. And that's also including diverse biological rhythms, right? So, we can all start to expand our understanding of how this could change the nature of work for ourselves personally, but also in our working relationships. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, Roxy, you just gotta start loving your luteal phase.
I know. But
like, saying no to things and like really seeing, month over month, the thing that you fear happening, which is that somehow you'll be out of the loop, the FOMO, right, or whatever, it will hurt your business, that doesn't actually happen.
It's just about strategizing and doing it differently, right?
You're not going to stop doing
centralizing.
You're just not going to do it during the luteal phase. You're going to do most of it in the follicular and ovulatory phases. And in the luteal phase, you're going to do all your deep work. You know, all the hard work you have to do as an entrepreneur to like bring things to fruition, to create the reports, do the operational stuff, do the finances, whatever it is you're doing, write the marketing campaigns, build the advertising. I don't know, whatever your job entails, right?
Right.
You're going to do hours and hours of that for like a week and a half. Do you know how much you would get done if you did 10 solid business days of deep work? Your whole career would change within a quarter, because you'd be so much more productive in a more efficient fashion. When you spread yourself too thin and you have a meeting in the morning, but then you try to squeeze in like a writing session, like in between that, and then a lunch meeting, that writing session is garbage.
Yeah.
Right? Well, not to mention the kids too, having our kids, right? It's like, you're so spread thin all the time, I feel like, right?
When are you most creative? Because you said writing, but when are you, because Roxy and I work in creative fields. Mm-hmm. So when is the best phase for being the most creative?
You're creative in every phase.
Well, it's okay. So just a different type of creative.
It's just a slightly different type. Like, for example, you might, in your follicular phase, let's say you're writing a book, you might map out and play with different versions of chapter outlines or a story outline or research for a piece, right? Mm-hmm. In the ovulatory phase, you might talk to experts or talk to people that you need for that piece of work, right? Mm-hmm. And then the luteal phase, you finish writing and you edit it. And then in the menstrual phase, you, having taken a step back from it, you look at it again, you read it again, and you evaluate it from a different brain point of view because you're having different hemispheric communication at that phase, right? So the whole month is an opportunity to work on this project because a project requires all of these different parts, right, of your creative input to bring it to completion. It's not just the doing, it's all the parts that come before and after that make a project successful and complete. There's that. And then with the motherhood piece, I mean, there's so many just ongoing. I mean, I find the grind of like ordering clothes online and getting supplies. It's like never ending. Yeah. Like shopping online. I'm like, I don't want to do this.
It almost feels like impossible sometimes. You're just like, oh my God, like that on top of, right? There's so much to do.
So what I have found is that cycle syncing my motherhood to-dos helps me a lot. Because if I don't, what I find is that I'll start hearing my daughter complain to me. That's how I know I might have fallen off the cycle syncing method as a mom. She'll be like, hey mom, can you play with me? You're always in front of the computer. You know, can you, like I'll hear that. As soon as I hear that, I'm like, wait a minute, what's happening? What phase am I in? What am I doing, right? If I, for example, am ordering clothes for her online in my ovulatory phase, and instead of playing with her when I have the most energy to do that kind of kid play where it's more natural for me, and I don't take advantage of that, I like stop. I'm like, this can wait. She's not going to outgrow her clothes, even if they're slightly too small. The weather's not going to change. I will just reschedule this action of shopping for her clothes till my luteal phase. I'm just going to move it. I'm going to stop. I'm going to get up and go play with her right now, right? So it helps a lot to batch the tasks. So that way throughout the month, she feels, even though I can't, you know, always be with her the way she would like as a 6-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. All kids feel like their parents never play with them enough, right? If I batch our project, like follicular phase, it's like craft city. I'm like, what new thing do you want to do? Let's build something. Let's do something. I'm not always in the mood to do that. So let's do it when I'm in the mood. Ovulatory phase, pre-COVID, let's go see people. Let's go to a museum. Let's go out. Let's do stuff because that's when I'm in the mood to do it. I have the energy to do it. Happy mommy, happy kids. It's all connected. Then in the luteal phase, okay, let me just go through the mom grunt list of does she need any supplies, clothes, any paperwork, any appointments I need to schedule. Let me just bang those out this week. Mm-hmm. And then in the menstrual phase, I'll just model for her some like quiet time. Like let's sit together on the couch. You read your book. I'm going to read mine. Or let's just go take a nap or let's just do something relaxing. Mm-hmm. Right. And I batch the types of activities based on my cycle. So she gets a robust experience. Mm-hmm. I am happy, calm, and enjoying all the things we're doing. And I don't feel burnt out on all the motherhood to-dos. So that's another way cycle syncing can really help you. There's a motherhood chart in chapter 9 of the book that really breaks out all of these tasks. It's a game changer when you start to batch the timing of what you're working on. And yes, of course, I know sometimes life happens. There are deadlines at work. There's a crisis at school. This is not about doing this 100% of the time. It's not. And guys don't do that either. I'm not asking us to do it in any event. But if you could, just imagine if you did, because right now you're doing it 0%, right? Because you've never heard about the infringement. Imagine if you did this just 50% of the time, even 25% of the time, if from a project point of view, there's no negotiation on the food and the fitness thing. You got to do that correctly every day. Mm-hmm. But if you just project batched your projects in that infrating way, like a quarter of the time, half of the time, your whole experience of stress and exhaustion, it would just transform pretty quickly. It's worth the experiment for 3 months to see how you feel about it after that. Most women never want to go back to the other way, but I'm always open for the possibility that they're like, no, I don't, you know.
game on, Tammin.
What about, and Roxy and I should talk about this, because what about before we leave, like sex drive? I mean, I, you know, it's interesting because since, I don't know when this started, about 7 months ago, I started writing down every single day. This is so weird, but like how I felt, what I was craving, what my sex drive was, because I've always had a really elevated sex drive. It goes in ebbs and flows, but I would say I have a healthy sex drive. But on day 11, I noticed every day 11, if I have sex on that day, I have the best orgasm I've ever had. And that orgasm doesn't happen 2 days later. Doesn't happen 4 days later. And it's interesting. I'm so glad we're starting to talk about like sex and orgasms. And like, I just find it really interesting. And I feel bad for my husband because I'm like, it's day 11. But like, it's always on day 11. So no something's pressure. Happening. Yeah, no pressure. I knew it was. I find it like super easy to orgasm. It's like not a chore. It's like wonderful. It's sexy, but it's not my ovulation. Ovulation's around 14, 15 days for me. So like that, it's that, it's not true sometimes when you feel the sexiest. I don't know what it is, but there's something that happens on day 11. So maybe you can talk us through, I mean, Roxy, you should talk about maybe what's going on with you and your sex drive, mm-hmm. but like what is happening when it comes to hormones too?
Roxy?
Yes.
Roxy, no, let me know. Yeah, do you have a day 11? Roxy, do you have a day 11?
So I have, you know, for me, I feel like my sex drive really kicks in when I'm ovulating. And like, this is going to sound kind of, I don't know, a little, maybe it's like a little too gross, but like when that sort of discharge comes out a little bit, like.
Yeah. Cute are you? Let me give you a name so you don't have to be feeling.
He's like, don't say the word, the D word.
It's like egg whites.
I think we would feel a lot less shame as women if we had accurate vocabulary. You don't know what to call it.
Yeah,
so you feel right. awkward and uncomfortable, and then you feel embarrassed because you don't know what to call it, right? Again, not having enough education is so disempowering. That was a great example of your moment of disempowerment because you don't know to call that cervical mucus.
Ah, okay. So it's not egg whites.
It should be the consistency of uncooked, nice and stretchy egg whites.
Yes, yes.
Some people, when they say egg whites, are like, it's white.
Yes, not scrambled.
Not poached, not fried, just uncooked.
Right. So, and what that cervical fluid is representative of is the fact that you have ovulated. And in a healthy way, right? So that's a good physical biomarker of ovulation. You only get that raw, stretchy egg white at ovulation.
Okay.
The type of discharge that you have in luteal phase is not cervical fluid. It's a different kind of vaginal discharge that's also completely normal. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just important that we have the right name so we don't feel ashamed and awkward and we feel empowered and we know why we're getting that at that time. So you've ovulated, that's why. And anybody who's trying to conceive would know. All right, so I've got when you guys are vibing. Now, Tammin, are you tracking your basal body temperature?
No. I do know the 2 to 3 days where I feel warmer. But I'm not actually getting a thermometer out.
The reason why I think that might be interesting for you is because you're having some symptoms that are a little inconsistent, and it would be mm-hmm. really great for you to dial in. Is day 11 when you're ovulating? Because it could be, right? It could be. You could be ovulating a little early, or that could be a pre-ovulatory surge of testosterone. Like mm-hmm. It would be interesting for you to dial that in. And one of my favorite tools to recommend is the DAISY basal body temperature tracker. DAYSY. Mm-hmm. You stick it in right before you wake up in the morning, before you get out of your bed. You're still horizontal. You have not really moved much. You take the thing off your nightstand, you stick it in your mouth. It does not go anywhere else.
No other hole.
In your mouth, under your tongue. Yeah. You hold it there for a few seconds.
Don't put it in David's hole, Roxy. Yeah. Don't try to take his temperature. She's so wood. She'd be like, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me.
Don't put it in your vagina.
And then it'll send wirelessly to their app in your phone, your temperature in that moment. And then it presents you with this beautiful monthly chart of your basal body temperature. I think that's really a great thing to do when you're having some mysterious symptoms. Mm. First place to look is, what's going on with BBT, because that will tell us if you're ovulating. It will tell us what's happening in the luteal phase. It gives you so much data to use. It's a key biohacking tool for sure. And it's really important as you go through perimenopause to understand if you're having symptoms, you know, what's going on and are you ovulating? Are you not each cycle? Okay. So let's talk about sex. That's where we started this conversation.
Baby.
Yes. Let's talk about sex.
Probably my favorite subject to talk about.
Because I love it too. We love it. It's called Women on Top. Remember?
On the side or on the bottom.
Alessa, yeah.
Totally. And you know, I'm getting so warm. I'm going to take off my sweater.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
So here we go. Favorite thing to talk about, because it's such a place where you can have so much quick wins when it comes to understanding the infradian rhythmic effect on your sex drive, right? So, okay, let's just state the obvious. Pornography has done us a little bit of a disservice because we think we should be in the mood at the same level, wet and ready instantly, and you know, or climaxing in under 30 seconds. Okay. That is sort of like what pornography has put into your mind as what is normal. So I just want to state that that is nowhere in your cycle normal. And that if you have been judging your sex drive based on that criteria, and you have been telling yourself that something's wrong with your sex drive because you have thought that you needed to be in the mood, wet and ready and climaxing quickly, and that's where you've been, that's the standard by which you've been comparing yourself, you probably don't have anything wrong with your sex drive. And I'm going to now give you a tour of your sex drive across your cycle. And I'm going to also, if we have time, teach you how to optimize your orgasm.
We have time for that.
We will make time for that.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to go get a cup of tea and I will be ready to listen.
Okay. So in the first half, in the follicular phase, right? So what we're going to talk about, no, let's back up first. You have four stages of arousal, right? You have tumescence. Anybody know what that word means? No. It's the female version of erection.
A hard on.
It's where the tissues become engorged with blood and the surface area of the clitoris and the inner labia expand. What does expanded surface area mean for you? Well, since you have those 8,000 nerve endings, you want the surface area maximally engorged so that any stimulation you receive creates more pleasurable sensation for you, right? So that's why what I call a cold approach, right? Never touch the clitoris until tumescence has happened. Don't go down there when she's all tight in the bud and she hasn't been told that anything was about to happen. Right. Yeah. There's been no foreplay of any kind. Do not go do that. Do not even use your vibrator in that way. No. Very, very bad. Okay. You're going to wait, get yourself somehow mentally in the zone, in the sexy zone, have some tumescence happening. Do not go below the belt until you feel tumescence happening. You can feel it. Okay, it's not as obvious as an erection.
Men need to know this too. Like, men need to know this as they
big time. Yeah. If you're in a heterosexual relationship, yes.
Because they jump the gun so much of the time. You know?
Do they? Do they, Roxy?
Do they?
Or David's like,
he's like, I need to get down there.
And then you go into a shame spiral, right? Because you're like, oh no. Yes. In pornos, I should already be wet and ready and like this should be feeling good. It's not feeling good. What's wrong with me? Why is this, you know, you see, without knowing the biological realities, that we're so much unnecessary suffering. And again, 65% of women are sexually unsatisfied. So this is one of the reasons we don't understand how it works. Okay, so we have tumescence. Then we have the thing you're going to learn a lot about today, the orgasmic plateau. Just hold on. I'll get to it. I won't keep you waiting. It's a little foreplay,
though. I know what that is. You're about to get there and then it stops.
Then we have, no. Then we have climax.
Gotcha.
And then we have the refractory period. These are the four parts to your whole sexual arousal process, okay? Tumescence, orgasmic plateau, climax, and the refractory period. So you have those four parts. Then the infradian rhythm has this very specific effect on your sex drive throughout the month. You have two dry phases and two wet phases. Mm. What does that mean?
Okay. Mm.
That means 2 weeks out of the month, you don't need lube unless you want to. And 2 weeks out of the month, you have to have the lube.
You don't have to?
Don't pass glow without the lube. You have to.
I didn't know that. But you only
I know you didn't know that.
You only need lube because you're dry or it's a better experience. Meaning, like, I don't know if I've ever gone, oh, I need lube, but
you
maybe
need lube
I do.
And you're not enjoying any of the activity.
Okay.
Because you're dry, you don't have enough tumescence because you can't do stimulation because you're dry, right? Mm-hmm. You need lube. You need the lube.
What are the phases?
Okay. Follicular phase, the menstrual and the follicular phases.
Okay.
So the week you're bleeding and the week after mm-hmm. you're done bleeding, those are your dry phases.
Okay.
You would think menstruation's not dry.
Yeah.
Well, because you think it's a liquid coming out of you, right? But it's blood. It's not a liquid. It's a special kind of, it's endometrial tissue. Mm-hmm. So let's think about when you get a cut, right? Let's say you cut somewhere, right? And the blood comes out and you rub the blood. What happens to the blood?
It's dry, yeah.
It's tacky, sticky, dries up.
Yeah.
Same thing with your menstrual blood. So if you want to have intercourse of any sort with a dildo, with your partner, whatever you're doing, you got to put lube on it because your menstrual fluid will become very tacky and dry and cause you friction. And friction equals the opposite of pleasure, which is
pain
and discomfort.
Pain. Oh.
Yes. And then what happens when we have pain and discomfort? We then don't want to do those things anymore. We have become avoidant, right? We don't enjoy ourselves. Unnecessary, right? Mm-hmm. Follicular phase too, right? Sometimes women feel pressure after their period is over because their partner's like, okay, maybe they're not into having period sex, which that's a whole other conversation. Because if you're with them, yeah, you know, that's frankly, that should be a prerequisite. Like if you're going to,
it's almost the best during your period. I'm sorry. I think people who don't do it during their period are missing out on something. I saw this TikTok last night and there was this joke that this woman's like, yay, I get like a week off of having sex because it's my menstruation. And I thought, oh my gosh, you're missing out on so much. Like there's so many good things that happen in that week.
There's great sex to be had every single phase. Nature designed women to, because we have 8,000 nerve endings on our clitoris, you can access that pleasure any day of the week. Okay. Men have many fewer nerve endings. And I always joke with people that, like, you know, like those clicker pens that have like four different colors.
Yeah.
You know, men are kind of like a clicker pen. Like sometimes it's peeing, sometimes it's ejaculating. It's a multi-purpose tool, but your clitoris is exclusively designed for pleasure. Okay. So we have these two dry phases where you have to have lube to get the party really kicked into high gear. So if you've been, if you think that, oh, you know, I don't really enjoy sex in my follicular phase, like menstrual phase aside, because I know that's sort of a controversial topic for each individual, or personal for each individual, whether they like to do that then. But in your follicular phase, period's ended, you're not yet ovulating. If that feels kind of like, it's mostly flat, you know, like if we engage, it's kind of like, it's because you're not using lube and you're not giving yourself enough time in these other stages, which I'm going to get to in a minute. Then you have the two wet phases, ovulation and the luteal phase. Okay. You're not just wet here because of the cervical fluid and because of the vaginal discharge. You're also having access to testosterone in these two phases. So you get through the tumescent phase faster here. So you're engorged, you're wet. This is what we think we should be all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just during the ovulatory and luteal phases. So you don't need as much lube, but you still need ample amounts of foreplay to get yourself in the mood, especially if you're stressed and you have kids and you're busy and you're not always mentally in that place where you're ready to make that transition to sexy time. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not underestimate that. Outside of the clitoris, the largest sex organ for women is between their ears.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we have to have some, and it can be as simple in a busy life. Like, you know, sometimes just me and my husband will say, okay, you know, it'll be the morning and I might be really in the mood in my ovulation phase, but like, it's morning time. I got to do the school thing, the breakfast thing, work, right? So I'll just be like, hey, how about later tonight, da-da-da-da-da, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell him what I want. The whole day, knowing that I have a sex appointment with my husband, is long, drawn-out foreplay. Then every time we see each other, it's like, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'll see you later. You know, it's a little bit of this, like, mm-hmm. you know, foreplay that we kind of just very lightly push on throughout the day, and just really fun once we finally get to do it, you know? So anyway, that's just another thing that you can do as a woman who is busy, is to like really bake it into your conversation and plan for it. So that's what we do. That's how the sort of those two phases work. Now, in terms of your orgasmic plateau, a foreplay you need, I've broken down in the book, there's a sex flow chapter in chapter eight. It really tells you like which types of foreplay to use to help you, how long you need to help you really take advantage to optimize your orgasm. But essentially the key is that orgasmic plateau in every phase. Mm-hmm. Most of us rush to climax. And this is why most of us are sexually unsatisfied, because we don't know if we're in a dry phase or a wet phase. We're not using lube. We don't give ourselves enough foreplay to have full tumescence. And then we just skip right over the orgasmic plateau. The orgasmic plateau, I'm going to put it on a scale. So you're not in thinking about sex is zero. Foreplay is between like a one and a three. Mm-hmm. Are you having foreplay tumescence, right? Orgasmic plateau is between a four and an eight. Mm-hmm. Climax is 9, 10, you're done. Mm-hmm. Right? Then we have the refractory period. You recover. You can start over. You can start that whole process over. You can do it as many times as you want. Okay. That between a four and an eight is critical. The more you extend that, and you use a technique called the edging technique, where you stimulate a little bit faster, you get up to a seven or an eight, and then you slow down and you edge back down to a four, and you're breathing. Did we stop breathing while I was talking about this?
That's why
I did that, because you both.
I'm just picturing, like, it's hard not to think about, because you're like, you're going to the end. I'm like, okay, actually, that time, okay, cool. And I'm like visualizing.
Yeah.
Visualizing
David and Roxy in bed. Like, it's hard not to think about.
It's hard to think about, right?
You both just did something that that really shows just what every woman does when. Right as we get into these bigger sensations, instead of expanding and doing that yoga breathing into your abdomen, you freeze. You stop breathing. Think about even when you self-pleasure, you do this without realizing it. Even when I was talking about it, you did it. I watched you both stop breathing. That's why I stopped to talk about this. Okay. A key component of you optimizing biohacking your orgasm is taking deep abdominal breaths during stimulation and slowing down, right? So as you're doing this edging process between a four and an eight, you're breathing, you're attuned to yourself. You're slowing down. You go up to an eight, you slow down to a four, to a six, to an eight. You can stay in this orgasmic plateau for as long as you want. I recommend at least 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Why?
Okay.
Because only during this orgasmic plateau can you generate the huge amounts of nitric oxide and oxytocin, which balance your hormones, slow down the aging process, protect your brain and your heart, boost your fertility, boost your skin collagen production. I mean, it is literally the fountain of youth, and it is it is triggered chemically by how you stimulate your clitoris.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Okay.
If that's not the quote of the night, yeah. I don't know what it is.
I know.
Do men need to be educated about this, or is this just something that you can know while you're having sex? Or do men need to know, okay, well, I need 10 minutes of foreplay. I need this. Mm-hmm. I need that. I feel like for men, it's a lot to process. Like if I said, oh, husband, listen to this podcast, I think it's just a lot of information. For us, we're like, oh, we got it.
It's so funny.
Like how,
Okay. You're right.
When we were beta testing the MyFlow app, one of the features is the partner sync feature where you drop in your boyfriend, your husband, your girlfriend's email address, and they will get, as you enter each phase of the month, a little hormonal dossier to help them understand what's happening with you hormonally, what kinds of things that would be fun to do and suggest to do together, and then how to optimize your sex life in that phase, right? every single woman, many women who were in the beta test were really worried about just what you reflected there, Tamin, that, oh, I think they're going to be overwhelmed. They're going to be weirded out. Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. I said, well, if you want to be part of the beta, we have to test this feature. So you got to do it. So they did it. Not only did I get like voicemails of very interesting natures, but I got like letters that were so emotional in nature from especially male partners of women offering such extreme gratitude. Like, I know how my process works. I knew that there had to be a recipe, a formula for success. I want to make my partner feel good. Thank you for giving me the formula so that I can do the thing that I want to do here to make her feel good. Men like a plan. Yeah. They want the map. If you think they're going to be weirded out, they're probably not the right person for you. But what you're going to find instead is that they're going to be like, why didn't you tell me this 10 years ago? Right? Mm-hmm. They want to know. They want to know. And once you tell them, then it's just like, okay, great. Now I can, you know, serve her up some pleasure exactly how she needs and wants it. Mm-hmm. And I can feel really good about that. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's like a win-win for both almost.
Because you're right, Tamin. It can't just be all on you. If you're single, you know, no problems, because you can just know this and do this for yourself, right? Mm. By the way, what happens after the orgasmic plateau, you can go into climax anytime you want. Then you have to rest and recover. And even if you're multiply orgasmic, all that means is that you just have a little shorter refractory period. You can just start again faster. But everybody...
That's Roxy. Mine goes down. Mine gets worse and worse. It's like the best one's first, and it's like second and third prize. I don't know how to them all to be first prize.
Well, you may be not giving yourself enough time in your orgasmic plateau. You may be overstimulating in that phase, if especially if you're using devices. Vibrators are, I would say, the thief of the orgasmic plateau phase. If you want a good orgasmic plateau phase, you got to use your hand, or you got to have a partner use some other things, but you cannot use a vibrator, because once you hyperstimulate those 8,000 nerve endings, you need a longer refractory period, right? So... less pressure, gentle, take your time, more foreplay, more tumescence, so that everything is what it needs to be. And lubricant, having adequate lubricant is so critical, right? So, I mean, there's so, we, listen.
I'm just like so mad we have to leave. I'm like,
wow. More sex, right?
I know there's so much. I feel like I should do like a long weekend on just this piece, because, you know, again, it's not just because it's going to make you happier in your own self and in your relationship to have the quality orgasms that you're designed to have, but the health benefits, the specifically the hormonal health, the cardioprotective benefits, the neuroprotective benefits. It is, again, if we're talking about the things that move the needle and make a difference in wellness, right? What are we learning today, right? Knowing about this infradian rhythm and to eating and exercising in alignment with that is critical. And having quality orgasms predicated on your knowledge of the infradian rhythm, these move the needle with your health. These are these are the self-care practices women should be doing, not, you know, all the other stuff, which is beautiful and fun, but it's not going to move the needle.
So sex is a cardio exercise you would recommend for every point of your cycle.
We're going to do it.
It's low impact.
Or is it? Depends. That's when all the contraptions come down from the ceiling.
Roxy, what is this swing set over here?
Let me give you a hint. It's not my daughter's.
You know, just a quick follow-up.
For the sex question, you know, a lot of people too, and this is like also, I've heard so many different answers about this, but, you know, we've always been told that a woman's sex peak is later than a man's as far as like age goes. So has that been established? Because I've heard numbers anywhere from like 35 to late 30s to even 40s. Yeah. So when is a woman's sexual peak, or is it individual for each person?
You know, the conventional thinking is that for some reason, a woman's sex drive is peaking later. Mm-hmm. I would question that. I would like to question that officially, because if we are, the reason why I feel that that is being said is because it's predicated on this idea that as a woman is less beleaguered, plagued, bogged down by her hormonal fluctuations, once that's behind her and child rearing is behind her and all those hormonal swings are behind her, then she can finally thrive and have this like hot postmenopausal sex drive. That to me smells a little funny. Now, is it true that women postmenopausally, if they're healthy, can have a robust sex drive? 1,000,000%. And is that supposed to be what happens for you? Yes. Will that happen for you if you disrupt your infradian rhythm your whole reproductive years? No way, right? So what you hear more of is that women go through perimenopause and they're postmenopausal and they complain of vaginal dryness and low libido and they just are totally not interested at all, right? That's more what you commonly hear. So then it just, then again, like that pornography standard saying that, oh, you're supposed to have this hot sex drive as you age and then you don't, you know, you just feel bad about yourself. And I think that that's just very insidiously damaging, creates a lot of self-criticism and a negative, relationship with yourself. Here's what I think. I think that any human, male or female, if they take care of their biological rhythm and they really nurture their hormones with the right diet, supplements, and lifestyle, can have a healthy sex drive throughout their lifespan, including men who, again, that whole thing about, oh, andropause and, you know, after 35, men's testosterone drops. Yes, yes. Everybody's hormones change, but that doesn't mean that you're no longer functional, that you can't enjoy as a man. In fact, one of the things I taught my husband early on, I said, listen, you see it every day in the way that from your own perspective, right? You have to look at your own erection, or he doesn't see it every day, but you know, whatever day he sees it.
You don't know what's happening in your house.
Yeah. When you see it.
He's like, he sees his erection every day. We're like, oh, we hate ourselves right now.
No, trust me, he's not seeing it every day. Okay, so when you see it, right? Pay attention to the angle of the erection because that's a key biomarker of your cardiovascular health, right?
So what, like what?
Meaning what is, if it's pointing up towards your belly button, you are cardiovascularly doing well.
Okay.
So as soon as it gets to sort of parallel to the floor and dipping, pointing towards the floor, that's actually something that some good dialed in primary care physicians of men will ask about to kind of do some early gauging of, you know, heart disease risk, right? So again, even for men, their hormone levels, their body parts can be used, just like we're suggesting for women, to gauge their health. And if they're seeing that angle of their erection changing, they can increase cardiovascular activity and they'll see that angle change. Right?
So
it's so fascinating. You've got to use everything the body is giving you as a gift. It's biofeedback. Nothing in the body is superfluous. This is, we don't even understand fully the evolutionary process that brought this all together in this extraordinary way, the human body, right? Everything it does, your bowel movements, the smell of your urine, the smell of your sweat, the tone of your, like the, what's happening on your skin, where you're breaking out, your erection, your menstrual cycle, it can all be information for you to start thinking about what do I need to do to take care of myself so I am healthy as optimally as possible. You know, I think it should just be such common knowledge.
And we've gotten so bogged down with medicine. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Medicines and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, like nobody,
we could go on for another 6 hours.
I'm like, I don't want her to leave.
I know. It took so long to get here. Please don't leave. But I think we have to go, guys. It's the longest podcast we've had, but we love you so much. And I know that you have obviously, you're going to tell us where people can find everything about you, but can people do one-on-ones with you or are you so in demand that we can't get to you?
Okay.
So I occasionally make room in my schedule for one-on-ones, but I have an extremely talented hand-trained team of flow coaches that do all the one-on-one telehealth coaching that you need. But yeah, I mean, flow living, there's three ways that you can interact with us through our digital therapeutic courses, right? So if you want to hear me talking for hours and hours, right, you'll have me teaching you different steps of the protocol in video modules. And then you get specific homework week by week to help you change your food, you know, over time. If you're having a period problem, a diagnosed issue, like, you know, you have fibroids, you know, you have PCOS, you know, you have endo, you know, you're struggling with your fertility and you need to do a lot of cleanup work. Monthly Flow is our premier digital therapeutic program for that. Mm-hmm. You can always add on one-on-one telehealth coaching to really troubleshoot and ask your personal questions. And then we have the Flow Balance supplements that really, if you've been on birth control, if you've got postnatal depletion that's been unaddressed, if you really want to protect your fertility, you want to help your hormones stay balanced, this is what I formulated. Your endocrine system needs these micronutrients every single day to function optimally. It's the ultimate hormonal biohacking kit. And then, yes, we have the app, which is you can download at myflowtracker.com. And it's the circle, not the feather. I don't want to, you know, that's a whole other thing. And then you can get a whole bunch of like amazing infradian rhythm quick start guides if you go to the book website, which is intheflowbook.com. And if you listen to this and you're like, I just want to get started living my infradian life, even though you're in a circadian world, join us at the cyclesyncingmembership.com. We call it Flow 28. You're going to get grocery lists, meal plans, recipes, workout videos, monthly live cute calls with me, video chats with me, where we dive deep into living this way, troubleshooting whatever's coming up for you. It's all part of this program. And of course it's $28 a month because your cycle's 28 days, right? So it's like this, it's so easy to do. And you know, I would love to, you know, offer a free month of this to everybody who's listening, of Flow 28, because just giving it a try for a month is pretty game changing. And I just want every woman to really start taking care of herself. So we can,
we'll let everyone know. That would be amazing.
We'll give you guys a special code and get you guys all signed up.
Thank you so much. This has been it. Last time I spoke to you, I didn't eat sugar for like 2 months, and I'm like, shit, I'm gonna have to do that again. Damn it!
No alcohol.
And I know you can eat. I know you can have things in moderation, but you have to clean up the hormones first before you can have a bit of sugar and the wine and the caffeine, and it doesn't affect you, because I know you have to clean up the stuff before you can have a little bit of it. And
gotta take the trash out.
It's the kitchen and the garbage, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Make sure you're putting good things in and make sure it's coming out properly.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. And you guys can find us on Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And Women on Top Podcast on Facebook.
Don't forget to what, Roxy?
You rate, subscribe, and comment so we can keep bringing you amazing episodes like this. Do it.
Do it. And I am Tamin Sersak.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are Women on